This is Graham Kirkham. So the next stage of our interview is interviewing Graham Kirkham from Kirkham's Lancashire Cheese. It's quite a key year for this year. It's 40 years of making cheese on Kirkham's Lancashire, on that farm.
Wow, 40 years.
But I always think, it makes me
you
laugh.
You haven't been making cheese for 40 years.
Not me. not me. I've been there.
You know
what? I opened the hunt. I really opened the hunt. Me, I don't know. I've been there 18, 20 years.
Yeah.
1978 it started. Well, that's when my grandma retired.
Yeah.
And then persuaded my mum to start making cheese. Well, my dad did and my grandma did. Persuaded my mum to start making cheese. So they converted a little outside building.
Yeah,
like size of your front room, literally. Yeah. We converted that, and then that's where we started. I think my grandma came for 2 days. I think it was 2 days to help us start making cheese and watch my mum through it, take her through the process, and just left her to it. And away she went.
It always makes me laugh because you always say we've been doing it 3 generations. You and your mum and your grandma. What did your grandma's mother do?
Well, I'm pretty sure they made cheese.
Exactly, so there's 4 generations
and then you
go, well, no, man, there's 5 generations.
And also there was cheese making on my dad's side as well.
Yeah.
So on my mum's side there was my grandma. On my dad's side there was my uncle Roger, who lived a mile down the road, and they actually made cheese. But they didn't make it all the time, it was a little bit on and off. But, you know, as being very young, 4, 5 or 6,
yeah.
I remember going into the dairy and their storerooms and there was cheese there.
Yeah. Well, my great-grandma used to just make cheese when milk marketing board would like reject, if they rejected the milk or turned up with it, they had too much milk, they wanted surplus. So she used to just make cheese maybe 3 or 4 times
yeah.
a month. But like before the war,
yeah.
she used to make it every day, but after the war it was just kind of whenever the milk marketing board didn't want it or there was a problem with it, the milk came back.
Well, it was a way of putting milk on a shelf, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Making cheese, you were putting milk on a shelf, it was a way of storing milk.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Mm.
I think, was it prior to the war, was there 220 Lancashire cheesemakers?
There was more than that, I think.
There's more than that. I thought there was 220, and then after the war, was there about 22 of us?
Yeah,
and now, there's 7 of us.
Yeah.
And then you're the only one who makes.
Well, yeah.
When you know when your grandma made it then, but it wouldn't have been called. It was Mrs. Kirkham's.
No. That. So back in
the days, you sold it under a number.
Yeah, but I think we were number 39. Well, we took my grandma's number on. So, and I'm sure, looking back on the cheeses, if I can remember, in purple was written, purpley blue was written number 39.
Okay.
And it all went to the milk marketing board.
Yeah.
And then people came and bought everyone's cheese from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only in 1991?
That deregulated.
Deregulated. And the milk marketing board dissolved. And that was a big turning point then. Because we all went from all the cheese buyers started coming, who were buying our cheese from the milk marketing board, started coming direct to us. But what it did for all us cheesemakers, we all went from numbers to names.
Mm-hmm.
So in counters, you then saw Kirkham's Lancashire, Appleby's, Montgomery's
yeah.
Cheddar. So we all got names and faces behind the cheeses.
Yeah.
So I think that was a big turning point.
I think it was
in the British cheese
industry. I don't think it was a real positive turning point because when I worked in France, you might have an amazing cheesemaker who makes something more like a little goat's cheese, but when it got to the end counter, that customer had no identity.
Yeah.
It became you bought something more just as you buy Lancashire. They didn't buy
a specific person.
Yeah. No, and I think because of that,
well, the emphasis was more on
the AOCs
money,
and the name.
It?
Yeah, yeah. So, it comes to,
so
yeah.
because you go, I'll go and buy my something more from
yeah.
Andy Swinston because he does the best.
And yeah. I talked to French, we did a farm. You came to that face congress thing we did down
there. Yeah, the talky thing.
Yeah, we both did a talk. Yeah, so it's
another mess we got ourselves
yeah,
into.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, But I talked to the Frenchman there and he was like, well, we have a real issue because every time I try and sell it to a cheesemonger, they'll just put their own name on it. They don't talk about the farm and where I'm making
yeah,
it. And I was
yeah.
like, well, it's difficult because then if you make a real quality cheese, people don't know who is it from. So you, within your privileged position, you can control your brand. People talk. I think you're the best known cheese we do.
Wow.
I mean, we don't do a lot of well-known cheeses. That's not what we do. But, you know, but
yeah.
the people come into our shop and they know Kirkham's Lancashire,
yeah,
all the cheese
yeah,
that I come
yeah.
to, and that's a brand. Whereas if you were like Lancashire or Cream of Lancashire,
yeah.
they would say it would be more the shop. Or you get it from the butchers in Barrow, where you get good Lancashire. Yeah. And the shop would be in control. And, so I think it's a brilliant thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think in those 40 years, your cheese has changed? Well, it's obviously changed a lot, but what do you think?
what have we done in 40 years? We've made lots of mistakes, but no, we're not doing too bad. I feel in 40 years we've done a full circle. I feel years ago when my mum started making cheese, we made what I call an old-fashioned Lancashire, following on from my grandma. I feel as we bought new equipment and particularly when we moved dairies, things change. I feel, you know, a lot of us cheesemakers, we're all guilty of change, aren't we? You'll buy a new piece of equipment, or you alter something, or something will happen. You know, things change every sort of few months, or you do something different, or buy something. And if you look back at what you did 20 years ago, and look where you are today, the change is quite dramatic. And I think that's what's happened to us. You know, we've gone through that path and that circle. So I think now we make something very, very similar to what my grandma would have made back in, you know, 1975.
Yeah.
When my mum first started making cheese in 1978. I feel we're back at that point. You know, we use... I wouldn't say we went completely industrialised. We didn't go industrialised making cheese, but we started using, you know, the birth of industrialised starter cultures in the 60s. That dramatically changed British cheese making.
Made it faster, didn't it? Made it
faster.
Ready available bacteria.
There you go.
So like you put it in, it does what it's supposed to do. Acidifies your milk. Why are you taking a day to make a cheese when you can make it in 3 hours?
3 hours.
And
it gave it flavour through acidity, so you could sell it younger. I think it worked well for the supermarkets. They could sell cheese at a younger age. Still had certain flavour. Although it was acidity forming flavours. So they could sell it at a younger age for less money. So it worked for that supermarket boom or start or package. And I think, you know, we weren't involved in that because we didn't sell the supermarkets, but you are dragged along with it a little bit.
Yeah.
So I do feel we had a period of time in our cheese making history where our cheeses were tighter, stood up more, more acidic, whiter. And I think we recognised that. And I feel we've done... I feel we recognise that, and we sort of looked at some of our old-fashioned cheese making techniques, like what my grandma used to do. In fact, we got an old book out, and it had some pictures of my mum in this book. It was called Rhubarb and Black Pudding, and it was by chef. I can't remember his name now. Anyway, the chef did this book called Rhubarb and Black Pudding, and in it was some pictures of my mum stood beside some equipment. One of them was a draining vat, and it had an old screw thread on it. And we kind of looked at that and thought, well, we don't have that now, but when she had it, what was it doing? So we recognised bits of equipment that we don't have, that my mum was using, and why she was using it. So we kind of worked out the changes we've made, how we'd probably speed things up. And we kind of do something about it and go back to, like I said, the full circle thing. So I feel now we're making cheese more like what we used to do way back when my mum first started.
And what difference do you think that makes to the flavour? Why do you do it? What's the point in taking slower time?
So we're never going to make quantity, are we? Because we don't do quantity.
No.
We haven't got the land, the animals. And I don't want to make quantities. It's all about quality, isn't it? And it's all about what you put in your mouth. It's all about flavour. So what it did, what we recognised is when we first went into that dairy, we made cheese on the new recipe.
Yeah.
Or the old recipe, I should say. The old recipe reinvented. Which was a lot less starter culture.
Yeah.
Much slower make. When we made that cheese and we put it on a shelf and we went to it, and well, even through the make, you could just tell the feel on the curd, the taste on the smell on the curd, it was kind of natural. It was kind of, I don't know, we dairy suddenly got that warm, dairy, milky smell.
Yeah.
And he just knew something was right. And then when we went to taste the cheese a couple of days later on the shelf, even though it was so young, we put an iron into it, we pulled it out, and it was so light and fluffy and delicate, and it just stood up. And there's no flavours masking the milk or the flavour of the farm, you know.
Yeah.
It was all kind of natural, it was all there. And I thought, you know what, this is cheese. This is what we're about, and this is what we used to do.
Yeah.
So that kind of created the spark to go down that route. So we started introducing a little bit more starter back in and just found our balance, you know, and altered some equipment and slowed things down. And that's, I don't know, that's where it's led us really. It's led us to making this softer, flakier, more buttery,
yeah,
old-fashioned type of Lancashire.
Yeah.
But what's funny out of it is, so we're using less ingredients,
yeah,
probably more time. But what the great thing out is, because we're putting it together properly,
yeah,
the cheeses last longer, yeah, they mature better. We found out, so we've been playing around with this recipe now, or this old fashioned recipe, or going back to what we used to do.
Yeah.
And we found, you know, we can keep the cheeses for 12 months now.
Yeah. And they just, you get none of the wild flavours.
None of the wild, they're all kind of balanced, all, yeah, you feel like they're put together properly.
It's funny, isn't it?
It's weird, and we've used less, you know.
I always think that, I always use you as a great example. I think the more we start to understand the science is brilliant. But, you know, it's really interesting that you take that product and you fundamentally still don't really understand it. You know, the scientists can work out how to make creamy Lancashire, yeah, and how to build it and how, yeah, to, you know, you can, this is the acidity profiles, this is the starter bacteria, this is doing that. But actually, you can almost go a little bit contrary to that, and it makes a product which does last, and you go like, well, this is the great thing about cheese making, is you're walking such a fine,
oh, yeah,
line,
yeah, yeah,
between,
yeah,
art and science that it, and I always say, I know many dairy consultants, I always say that they can, it's an example I always use in cheese making courses, anybody, the really good dairy consultants can make any cheese, but Graham Kirkham can only make Lancashire. A dairy consultant might be able to make Lancashire, but he can't make it quite like,
yeah,
you
can't make
curves. Do you know what I mean? So you, yeah, can't make it, you might not understand the recipe, you might understand what's going on, but actually, you've had your hand in those vats every single day for 18
to 22
years.
Do you think that's why artisans and cheesemakers are quite open? Like, you know, they've always said, oh, come and visit us, we don't, because you're not really going to be able to steal what you do, because you can, like Andy was just saying, the essence of it is, you can show someone how to make creamy Lancashire, but they're not going to be able to make
curds. They're not, no, they can't. You can make, like you said, you can make another Lancashire,
yeah,
3 miles away, but you'll not make what we do.
No.
You know, what we've got on our farm, you know, and the milk is unique to us. You'll never replicate our milk and our farm again. It will make Lancashire somewhere else, but it'll be their Lancashire, yeah, you know, it'll be something different. And techniques, you know, you'll not, even though you think you're going to replicate our techniques, you won't do, because everyone has their own style. I think you can even see in the dairy with the girls that I've got, girls that work for me, fantastic. I am so lucky. I've got such a wonderful team working with me. But what I do, if I'm making the cheese through the day and I'm left alone and I can do it through the day, and you watch one of the girls come in and they'll do, if I'm too busy, they'll do this part of the cheese making or that part, and they'll do it just ever so slightly different. They don't think they're doing it, they're just doing it their way. Yeah. They think it's the right way, and it is the right way, and they're doing the right thing because I've shown them.
Yeah.
But there's still their little thing that they're doing to it, that's not quite what I would do.
Yeah, exactly.
But you add that up through a day,
yeah,
it makes a big difference.
Yeah, especially when you're making something like raw milk, which is, it's a live product,
yeah,
isn't
it's a live
it?
Product,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so even the way that, you know, you teach them how to ladle your curd,
yeah,
and they're just not going to have the same physique. You know, they haven't got the same. So even though they're doing exactly what you taught them, yeah, it's not going to be exactly the same, is it? And that makes, that amplifies up, as you said, with all the little things.
And what you've got to do is, you've got to make them understand why they're doing it.
Yeah.
So it's, so what happens in cheese making is, you were all generations pass recipes down, and we're all taught to do something at a certain time, and that's what you do, and that's cheese making.
Yeah.
But the real art of cheese making is understand why you're doing that, and then to look at why you're doing it. So again, the girls are brilliant with us, but they don't really, you know, I've told them why they're doing it and what they're trying to achieve, but they kind of like, because it's not theirs, they don't really get it, you know what I mean? They do it and they do a very good job. you know, and to be sort of gentle with the curd and ladle it softly and keep it all together. They do it to some degree, but not like I would do it, you know what I mean? Because I know what I'm trying to achieve out of it. I think as we've gone on this cheese making journey, we've learned such a lot doing what we've done. And I think what's maybe slightly different with us is we look at each process and we've looked at and said to ourselves, right, why do we do that? What's it trying to achieve?
Yeah.
How can we do it better?
Yeah.
Or what will make it better?
Yeah.
Whether it's, and it's all about draining curds, the handling curds, isn't it? This is what you're doing all through the day, basically. So it's how could you, you know, that's been my approach to it, is not by changing, you're not changing the recipe, you're just trying to understand what each bit does and strengthen it.
Yeah.
And how can I make that better, you know?
Yeah.
How can I make it do a better job of what it's supposed to be doing?
I think you're also different to the girls, is that you're in a privileged position that you see the bigger picture of the whole farm. So they're working in one segment of your business. For you, as well as a cheesemaker, you've got the farm, you know what's going on with the calving, you know what's going on with the feed, and you can feed that into them, but you're right in there, aren't you? So
I suppose I'm trying to balance it all in a way.
Yeah, like, I always think that, I mean, you use all of your milk and cheesemaking, which I think is pretty, there's not many people who do that. But because of that, you can breed in a way and you can farm in a way. And
I bet for the last 10 years as well, we've bred purely just to make the style of cheese we want.
Yeah.
So we've picked on high butter fat, high protein, probably more on the Friesian style cows, you know, to create the type of milk we want. We want milk with loads of caseins and proteins in. So I think we've designed the cows in a way to produce the milk that we're looking
for. Is that just through breeders figuring
breeding, out? Yeah. There is a catalogue for cheesemakers now of bulls to create cheese, milk for cheese.
Right.
So it's not high volume, but it's really good quality.
Mm.
But then the feed makes a big difference as well. You know, and
again, so we're fanatical about feed, aren't we? So we've got all our own equipment, haven't we? So we've got all this blooming money invested in all this equipment outside, which sometimes I look out the window and think I'm mental.
You're doing so. It's like George Stitchton. You're doing making a good cheese. Mike, who makes a young buck, when he makes an amazing batch, and I was like, "What'd you do that day?" And he says, "Well, he makes consistent cheese, you know, he makes really good consistent cheese, but he says the amazing batches, he reckons, are just when it's down to the farm. You know, so that is what takes it to the next level.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have that control.
Yeah.
He gets it all from one farm, but you have that control that you can really, and I think the best farmers' cheeses, you really have to have that control. Like Havard, their cheese has massively improved since Nick's been that herdsman.
Yes.
Because the way that
He plays
the cow's jazz, but apart from that, you know, it's
radio 2 works.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the way, you know, that sort of is placing the emphasis on the farming, I think, which is, and if you get with the way your cheese recipe, you're leaving a lot. Yeah, you're doing a lot of hand labelling, but you put that in so little starter, you're leaving a lot to the milk.
Oh, we're very vulnerable.
Yeah, so you're leaving a lot to the milk.
If you're walking that line, if you're going down that. I mean, if you start off with our milk, the ingredients is nothing, is it? It's, you know, the amount of starter we use and the rennet and everything, it's like...
It drops.
You wonder how anything happened. Mm. It's just drops, but it does, you know. You do leave yourself vulnerable. If there's anything wrong, it really does show its face. It really does show itself. So you walk a narrow line. But you know, like I say, you've got the right team outside understanding what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And knowing how easy it is to drop off that line.
The other thing I suppose I find interesting that a lot of people don't realise is how you farm, you know, like, so how you even plan your calving so you get more milk so you can make cheese for Christmas, and then, you know, like in the November, December time you change your cheese recipe as a result of the knowledge that you're not even trying to make the same cheese all the way through the year. You're trying to make different cheeses through the year, depending, because you know your market, you know you're going to sell more at Christmas, so you know, and that's...
Yeah, you've got to be careful with your carving patterns.
Yeah.
If you've got too many carving at once, it's very difficult to make cheese again.
Yeah.
It really is. So what we've learned to do
Why
is...
that?
So a new carved cow acts like a starter culture.
Yeah.
So new carved cows, milk going in. you want to pull your starter back or lower your temperature a little bit, because it'll make the cheese dry out a little bit.
Right.
So if you've got a lot of that coming in at once, okay, you'll get some dry cheese.
Yeah.
So how we try and do it is that we have a normal pattern of we're milking cows,
yep,
calving through the year. Then we might have a batch of heifers that'll feed into us about July and August,
yep,
just over a few months. So that'll build some Christmas stocks for us, but it's not dramatic all at once.
No, just
if too many coming in at once,
yeah,
you'll have a lot of dry cheese at Christmas.
Yep.
So it's kind of, you know, again, so it's seeing that, recognising that, and kind of, you know, making that carving pattern work for your own product, you know.
Yeah. But then, again, you have to do that because none of your milk gets sold, really.
No.
So you have to kind of, whereas if you're selling liquid milk as well, you can play less than like that.
Yeah, because
you know, like the big producers, if they're selling 50% of their, not the big producers, but a lot of farms selling 50% of their milk anyways. So if they want to make more cheese,
yeah,
then they just,
yeah,
use more of their milk, you know. Yeah. So whereas you have to kind of really play it more, don't you? I suppose
we do.
But then you get to turn every single day into milk. Jeez.
Yeah.
So what? Yeah. So it's every single day.
7 days a week.
Do
you make cheese on Christmas Day? Yeah.
Yeah.
We didn't do last.
Do you put more start culture into making pasta cheese make on Christmas Day?
No, we do on New Year's Day.
Do you? Just make a dry of cheese and then you smoke that on you. Nobody knows how.
No, nobody wants to do it. We've all got so bad heads, haven't we?
Yeah, so you just Kirkham's like, no, it takes 12 hours on New Year's Day, it's 2 hours over it, so chuck it all in and we're done.
Yeah, we didn't make cheese on Christmas Day this year just gone because we were putting a new floor down in the dairy. So we had the dairy, we were still working,
yeah,
but the dairy was in pieces, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the year before, I think I took a picture and sent it to one or two people, and there was cheese dated 25th of December.
Yeah.
Good on you, Graham.
But then being Monday before you, cheese just had all the liquid milk as well?
No, every day, 365 days a year, cheese went into milk, milk went into cheese. We do try and have, you know, between Christmas and New Year off quite often now. It just gives us a chance to get caught up in the dairy.
I think with you, like your mum, well, she had 30 cows.
Yeah.
And she made cheese every day.
Yeah.
Whereas now you've got that little bit bigger.
Yeah.
You have a bit of a bigger team.
Yeah.
You can just, you know, it's,
yeah.
Which I think has been.
And it's good. And everyone comes back refreshed as well, though.
Yeah, I think, well.
And we've other commitments as well. We, you know, obviously we do quite a few markets and things, Christmas markets around that time. We're selling more cheese, we're busier. So, you know, you get to Christmas, we've all, like you guys, I mean, you know, you should. Christmas for Christmas, and you're knackered, aren't you? You've had enough, haven't you? You've been battered.
Just sleep on Christmas morning.
Well, Christmas day last year, I fell asleep at the table.
Yeah.
I didn't even make it to dessert. My grandma on one side and my daughter on the other, and I ate my main course and I fell asleep at the table.
Yeah, well, Christmas, we're the same. We managed to have something to eat, but all afternoon I just sleep.
Yeah, it's just like, you've just made it.
It's like, you've made it, you've got there, and then you relax, and then you switch off like that.
Right, actually, it's quite nice to have that focus of going, right, once Christmas is done, you can just have a show. Even if it's half an hour,
just a little
sleep.
It's like, it's like a marathon and you cross the line, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's like done. Yeah. At least you know the name.
It's done. It's finished this year. Yeah. It's done. That's it. You know?
Another day, So what, because there is other Lancashire the larger Lancashire producers who source milk from many different farms. And they're making a different style of Lancashire, a lot of them, really, aren't they, nowadays?
Yeah, there's seven of us. Is there seven? I think seven of us all with the same postcode.
Yeah.
These are the dairies. Buy milk in, you know, support local farms, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
But they're very, you know, the bigger commercial dairies, they sell to supermarkets, you know, they make thousands of tons of cheese. We do about 80 tons a year, I think, 85.
Yeah.
They'll do thousands of tons of cheese. Single day curd, so means the milk that they take that morning will be made into cheese and in a cheese form, by probably 2 o'clock.
And do you think, where a lot of times when we you don't get it so much in this area because as I said, we've got Lancashire postcode, we are in Yorkshire, I'd like to make that clear, but we have got, we've got Lancashire postcode, so people come in and they like Lancashire and people look for Lancashire, but when I worked in the south of England, you'd say Lancashire and they'd go, oh no, I don't like Lancashire, and I think that, especially, I find it as well when I get out and about, just away from this little area, this little yeah. because we were right on the edge of the Longclave where people love Lancashire cheese, yeah. like best selling cheese.
Yeah.
When you get out and about, people, Lancashire has a poor reputation, I think.
It does.
And do you think that's down to that style of cheese?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah, it's down to.
Not that it's a bad cheese, but it's not.
It's not bad, it's just. It's not a true old fashioned Lancashire, you know.
Which, when it's right, like your cheese, I would have on my cheese board every. Yeah. Every day.
But is creamy, is that the most traditional then? Because sometimes when people come in the shop, they'll say, can I have tasty Lancashire, or say, can I have crumbly Lancashire? And
I think what we've got now is, I think we've got, we've made so many different styles of Lancashire,
yeah.
of Lancashire, out of Lancashire, haven't we?
Yeah.
So we've got a creamy Lancashire, which is a very young,
mm-hmm.
very young Lancashire, it's very mild, it's very creamy. We've got that style. Which is great, it works. We've got the tasty Lancashire, which I've always believed Lancashire has been a tasty Lancashire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, 3 to 4 months old, it's built loads of flavour up, curds are broken down.
Still soft though.
Still soft, yeah. flaky, yeah. it's delicious.
Like
that is Lancashire for
yeah.
me.
Yeah. And you've got. I find that even though a lot of people sell tasty Lancashire, too dry.
Yeah.
So they sell it as a really old cheese which burns, but it's actually a dry texture, whereas yeah. I think good. Taste actually like what we try and sell is on the border really, creamy tasting
yeah,
up there.
That's right.
Should still be soft in texture.
Yeah, should. That is a proper Lancashire.
Yeah.
Flaky, soft and buttery. And then you've got the, you know, really commercial, crumbly Lancashire, mm. which is so very young, very high acid, very white, and you touch it with a knife, it just falls apart.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I think that's where Lancashire's got a lot of potential.
And that's what I believe is,
yeah.
particularly when you go out on markets, so some experiences I've had is, you've gone out to different shows and events and markets, and you'll put some cheese out on a counter, and people taste it, and they'll turn and say, well, what's that?
Mm.
And I'll say, well, that's Lancashire. And they'll say, that's not Lancashire.
Yeah.
Lancashire's that dry, white, crumbly cheese.
Yeah.
And I'll say, no, that what you've got there is a proper old-fashioned,
yeah.
traditional Lancashire, you know, a raw milk Lancashire. Well, whatever it tastes delicious, but I don't think it's a Lancashire.
No, exactly.
Because all you know is the dry, white, crumbly stuff yeah. that touches you with a knife and it pulls apart.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, you know. It's a shame.
Yeah. So, but then it's just down to you, and you're the last producer. It's kind of your legacy at the moment, isn't it? We always. No, but you think about it. You think about this is a traditional British cheese made on a farm, small farmhouse producer. Britain has a history of making this cheese in the region. Even 1930s, there was 220. You go back 100, 200 years, there's probably 1,000 producers of Lancashire.
Yeah,
and you're the last one.
Hello.
So what you are the history of our nation of that particular one cheese is down to one person. And that's a bad thing.
Scary.
You know? No, because everything else has moved on and changed. And you think, well, it's scary, isn't it? You know, because you forget about it.
Wow, yeah, so... Yeah, something else.
Oh, there's pressure now. Brilliant.
Where's my stomach for one? One of these fitness, you know.
All this heritage balances on us now.
Yeah, but it shouldn't balance on you. It's not. It shouldn't. No. It shouldn't. That's.
Well, I think there should be more raw milk Lancashire cheesemakers, which would make, you know, old fashioned raw milk Lancashire more popular. And more people were making it. There'd be more available out there. And we'd all have a different style to it, wouldn't we? Everyone's style would be different.
Yeah.
It would just be, I don't know, people would be more switched on to it, it's more available, there's more styles of it, more
yeah.
people would be stocking it.
I think when we opened our first shop, what I wanted to do with Harvard Cheddar is I only want to do one cheddar.
Yeah.
I want to do two different batches. And just, like, this is the difference you get. And I think it's the same with Lancashire, we could do, not even just two different batches, but if you had two different producers, our counter, I think, could take that. And I don't
yeah.
think, I think we might sell a little bit less of your cheese, but I think we'd sell more Lancashire overall.
Overall,
does that make
yeah,
sense? I think
yeah,
because
yeah.
some people come in, and most people love your cheese, but some people would have preferred the other one.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
that it would actually raise the profile. I always say that, well, as far as I'm concerned, we need more shops like mine, because there is
lots of shops like
mine. But also, I'm not in a position, I think the more shops there is like mine, who can actually champion proper people like you, the more we can have cheese makers like you. The more cheesemakers we have,
yeah.
the more stable industry we have.
Yeah.
You can't rely on the likes of me and Camel Cheese and Nearsia Dairy and George Muse kind of holding up the whole.
No.
You know,
and that's what happens, yeah.
And you know, the more shops we have, the more farmers like you can be supported.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's.
How do we do it then? How do we roll your format?
No, I don't know. Don't
So what you're saying now is the British cheese industry all relies on shops like you?
No, I think farmhouse cheese. I mean, there's yours. Yours is a fairly consistent cheese. But you have particular cheeses like Martin got St. James.
Yeah.
And it does rely on shops like me because it's variable.
It's an amazing cheese. Yeah, you've got to adapt to it.
You've got to adapt to it.
And so it relies on people like us from cheese shops going, how I taste this is different to last week.
Yeah.
You know? Well, even most farm shops and delis just leave it on a counter.
Yeah.
And it forgets about it. You know? Yeah. And then they come in and go, I want St. James out last week, and it'll be massively different, and they won't like it this time, they'll never buy it again. Whereas if that cheese monger had been good and gone, you know, it's different, you want to taste it. It might be how you like it next week, but it's evolving. Yeah, yeah. You know, and yeah.
I think what happens, I've worked with you all day today, and I think what happens in your shop, which stands out to me today, is I think it's important not to have too big a range of cheese.
Yeah, right.
So you're constantly at these cheeses. So like what you talk about, Martin's cheese being variable, you know, it makes you go to it, pick it up and use it. All your cheeses today, you've gone to them all and tasted them all and you've worked through them, haven't you?
Yeah,
there's nothing really been left on that counter untouched today.
Yeah.
So that's what's really stood out. So
it
keeps it moving. Yeah. So all these, you know, you look at cheese shop counters rammed with dozens, you know, so many varieties. I can see how it becomes difficult and how they can become stale.
But also, the cheesemongers can't know about those cheeses. If you really want to know the detail, you have to concentrate. If you've got 120 cheeses.
How would you do that? Looking at what I've seen today, I don't know how that would work.
You also don't need it. You know, if you've got a good enough range, if you're prepared to have the diversity, right?
You rely on the customer then when they come in to say, I want Manchego. And you've got to have it and sell it to them, and then, you know, it might sit there for another couple of weeks and not be touched again.
Yeah.
Whereas if you train your staff to be like, well, this cheese is probably the closest we've got to Manchego, get the customer to taste it, and then hopefully it's a little relationship that you've got with someone.
And you introduce them to something else.
Which is great, and exciting for them.
Actually, you didn't come in for that cheese, but you've gone out with something totally different.
I always say, I don't think what I do is rocket science or complicated in any way, shape or form. The confidence to do it and to stand behind your idea. We had 2 years of making a loss, you know, but with Kathy and I didn't want to compromise on what we wanted to do.
No.
You know, and then because we had that period, all of a sudden people start to realise what you're about. And they go, right, well, we're going to go.
I get them.
Yeah. They don't have what I want, but what they've got is interesting.
Yeah,
you know, so
people that are not interested don't shop with us, which is fine. You know, that's more
convert them or lose them. I used to say. So that's it at the end of the day, isn't it? But it allows them to introduce people to. You're lucky. You've got a compared with a lot of cheese makers. You know, you don't have to enter awards really, because your name and your cheese is so strong. If you think about it, but a lot of these small cheeses, some of them we take all of their production. You know, so it relies on, nobody would have heard of that cheese if they came into our shop.
Gosh.
So it relies on a good cheesemonger going to taste it, because. You're not going to pick it up, are you?
No, that's a shame. That's the thing for new cheesemakers. It must be very difficult for them, mustn't it? For, like you say, you put the cheese into the counter, unless someone's picking it up and helping them and helping them along.
Yeah.
They're just going to get sat there and left, aren't they? And
yeah.
It must be very difficult for them.
Yeah.
It's shopping in general, though, because if you go around the supermarket, you're not. I know there's a place for supermarkets. I'm not being snobby about food. It's just. You go around and a lot of it's just anonymous, isn't it?
How is your cheese? Your cheese? Your cheese is going to sit next to those commercial Lancashires.
Yeah.
Right? And they're going to be cheaper because they're made on an industrial scale. So they're going to be cheaper. So how does the customer know to pick your cheese up rather than commercial Lancashires? They don't.
It's just.
They go, it's slightly more expensive, so it must be better.
Which they're not generally going to do, that's why it relies, at the end of the day, this quality cheese relies on
reputation, I suppose, doesn't it?
Reputation, I always think your reputation comes from, you've been built on cheese shops tasting out and going, actually, you don't want to take that cheap Lancashire, you want to take Graham Kirkham's, because actually, you'll want to come back, you'll take that piece home and
you'll come back for more,
whereas the other Lancashires are good, you'll come back and you'll eat it and you go, that's nice, but what I want from a cheese is you go, what was that? Where was that? What was that? It was not just, that's nice, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which a lot of the other languages have, but yours, you go, Who makes that? I'm going to have some more of that. You know,
You want that reaction.
Yeah, you want that reaction. You want kind of,
and that's what we want. That's the reactions we're looking for. You know, that's why it's nice to come out and do a day like today with you guys and just watch people's reaction of when they taste all those good quality cheeses. Because you just get their reaction every time, don't you?
You get instant feedback.
Instant bump, isn't it?
Actually, I don't think about that, because as cheesemakers, we get a really good job because we test out cheesemakers' cheese, and we always get the good reaction. I guess when you're in the dairy, you're going, you
don't see that. You're seeing it every day, but we don't do it. So when you come, like I say, and watch the reaction of, you know, our cheese today, but everybody else's cheese, they're all wonderful cheeses, aren't they? And everyone's a winner. And the reaction of every one of them is brilliant, isn't it, you know?
So, where do you think you're going to take your farm now? What's the plan?
What's next?
What's next? When did you move to your new dairy?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. Did you increase your herd size at the same time?
Yeah. We built the herd up.
Yep.
To move into the new dairy.
Yeah.
With lots of heifers on the ground to then up the volume.
Yeah.
And we've had ever since, you know.
Yeah.
We don't buy any stocking. It's all homebred.
So it's all like closed.
It's we are a complete closed herd.
And that means that's it. They've lived together all their lives.
Yeah.
Do you think they get a better herd mentality doing that?
It's all in house. It's all, you know, mothers and daughters, and it's all generations of, bloodlines and breeds being passed down, isn't it? It just feels right. It's just, as a cheesemaker, it just feels right. I wouldn't want to. We won't go out and buy any animals in, because you don't know what you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy animals in, you can quite often fetch foot problems with you, or other problems that other farms have got that their herds are probably immune to.
Yeah.
But you bring them into another herd that haven't built that immunity up.
Yeah.
You can soon flare a problem up.
Yeah.
So we don't do that. It just feels right. You know your own animals. You know which is working really well. You know, it's quite scientific now. Is producing milk. You know, you need to. We milk test once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that milk test, we'll look at somatic cell counts, butter fats and proteins, caseins and calciums, on every cow.
Yeah.
So we can take that cow and we can say, look, this is working really well, this is the type of milk we want, we need to breed off this. We can look at the cows that aren't giving that top quality milk, but potentially look at a bull that we could put onto it, so its offspring would then give us that. So, we're able to constantly tweak our animals.
Yeah.
To create it's all about making that better eating experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it starts with creating the right milk, coming out the right animals, at the right temperament, in the right surroundings. We always say our cow housing's 5-star. Yeah. They've all got, it's like a 5-star hotel, they've got loads of loafing room.
Yeah.
They've all got big cubicles to lie in. They've all got big, deep mattresses, as in spongy mattresses to lie on.
Yeah.
They've all got big feed passage area.
Yeah.
So they've all loads of food, very accessible, big water troughs to drink out of. So they're in such a lovely, relaxed state. They've got those rotating brushes to rub themselves against.
They love them,
they love them, so they keep themselves clean and the coats are all shiny. So it's just having that nice, if you can create that nice environment, we have to create our products, we have to create our raw products to make cheese, and our raw product is milk, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or ingredients, we have to create our ingredients. So if you create a great ingredient, or start with a good ingredient, you're gonna pretty much end up with a good product.
Yeah.
And that's how we see it, really.
Yeah.
But creating that good ingredients is good cow housing, good breeding, and good feed.
Yeah.
Good herdsmanship,
yeah.
And animal temperament. Yeah. And if you put that package together, you've created a good ingredient to hopefully go on and make good cheese.
And one of the great things about farm cheese is that is what makes farm cheese unique, is that you are in control of that. Yeah. That milk is not anonymous. It's not anonymous pasteurised, standardised.
No.
It is that herd in that feed is Kirkham's Lancashire.
That's what makes it.
And that's what makes farm cheese so different to large scale cheese in
many regards. Large scale cheese. It's all standardised, isn't it? Plus, don't forget, your milk has been split up. So much has gone to make cream. You know, it's been pasteurised. You know, it's, your milk's been split down so many times, hasn't it, before it even gets to the cheese making process. So many people said to us, why don't you make butter or why don't you do cream? And I'm like, because I won't be able to create this. What do you mean? I need everything in my milk. All that effort we put into feeding them cows, looking after them, milking them. How can I then take that milk apart? And I need it all in, all that effort needs to be all left in there and put on a shelf in the form of Lancashire cheese.
So what, so you upscaled your farm as part of that to make still a family enterprise. Your partner Kelly's in it. You're still, Sean still drives, but your dad still delivers to us.
Still all doing it.
And moved to the new dairy's on the farm. And I think your cheese went through a few difficulties when you moved to the new dairy. So you took out this massive big lawn, you built this new dairy, and you messed it up.
And that's basically it. That's what I did.
I would have heard, like when we moved here, it was difficult, you know, we were tight financially. So I can only think of what was going through your mind.
I ruined it, didn't I?
You're straight on now, aren't you? You're making brilliant cheese now, but that first 6 months must have been pure hell, really. Let's be honest.
We moved in, so we built this wonderful, fantastic dairy. Dead slick, dead efficient. Floor line was right, you know, from silage clamps to cow housing to the milking parlour, and then to the dairy, and then out the doorway and down the driveway. So the floor was right, dairy was set up, it was efficient, it was you know, just makes things, it was so much easier to make cheese. But we just, like I said, for that first 6 months, man.
Just the cheese wasn't any good, or
it just wouldn't keep. You could make the cheese, put it on the shelf, and within 3 weeks you were picking up bad flavours. Bad flavours, you know, it was bitter, sour. Oh, it was terrible. It was crazy. And what was weird is we made the cheese in the old dairy on the Wednesday. We moved the pipeline. We did the transition with the pipeline.
The old dairy was about the size of this room.
And we you know, that room was impregnated in Kirkham's Lancashire. And it almost made itself in that room. It was it was embedded in there, 30 years of cheese making in that room. And so we moved the pipework from the old dairy to the new one on the Wednesday. So we made cheese in the new one on the Thursday. So we went from the old dairy with the starter culture and the rennet, walked through the door and started making cheese in the new one. And you would have thought it would have just carried on like that, but it wouldn't. What
were the problems? What did they work out wrong in the end?
So when you went in the room, it smelt of lime and paint and building materials. We haven't got our starter cultures and our natural flora embedded in the place. It didn't have that warm, dairy, milky smell. It just wasn't there. It was cold, it was sterile, it was kind of awkward and stiff, the dairy. It just wasn't, just didn't work. And it took probably 6 months, maybe a little bit longer, to sort of unravel itself. But every few weeks you'd see signs of your old cheese coming back as it unraveled itself. It was weird, you know, with the same process, the same thing, but it just wouldn't.
Was it just time then to build the atmosphere?
Yeah, it's a bigger room though, wasn't it?
It was a lot bigger room, and there was no heating in it. So then we put heating in, and so we fetched some warmth back into the room. It was funny. As we got into this mess, people started ringing me and saying, "Are you having some problems, Graham?" "Yeah, am I having problems?" "You'll be all right, don't worry. I remember 15 years ago when we moved, exactly the same thing happened." But nobody tells you
before
that.
Nobody tells you,
you know what I mean? They wait till you get to the pain stage and then ring you up, you know, and tell you it'll be fine, you'll be all right, keep going, it'll unravel itself, you know.
But you've made it now, you've just got a bigger vat, you know, you've upscaled it a little bit.
We've got a nice new vat in, a little bit bigger. With a little bit more milk going in it. But again, the nice thing is, we've oversized the vat. A little bit more milk, so we've got plenty of surface area still left in the vat, plenty of drainage, so
we can drain it all and
drain it all, keep it where we want it.
Making good cheese in there.
Yeah, really happy with it. Yeah. Really, we've got that nice lightness about that, nice light, creamy, flaky, delicate Lancashire.
Our proper Lancashire should be.
Yeah.
So what's your ambition for the next 5 years, and just carry on?
Carry on as we are. I'd like to see. I'd like to see more cheese shops like you crop up, like yours. I'd like to export. I'd like to see more, not just, you know, our cheese, Kirkham's, Lancashire. I'd like to see more farmhouse British cheeses being exported, because I think the British cheese industry is unbelievable. I think we are amazing. Mm. We are amazing at making cheese in this country.
We've got the pasture, we've got the cows, we've got the weather.
Well, we're the biggest industry.
The only thing we're missing is the expertise. People like you have it, but there's not enough of it, I don't think.
Yeah, but I think times are changing. I think there's more new cheesemakers now than there's ever been.
Yeah.
I think cheese has become trendy. I think it's modern.
Mm.
I think more people are interested in it.
Yeah.
I think a younger generation are interested in eating it. And I believe that, you know, you see more and more people coming into cheese.
Yeah.
Especially in this last 5 years anyway. Yeah. So I think you know, the industry's good, and I think it's strong. I'd like to see more of it exported into Europe and further and beyond, and more people shouting about it, because I think British cheeses are, I think we're incredible.
Yeah.
I think we're as good as anybody. I think we're the best. We're brilliant at it. You know.
Yeah.
Do you have a favourite cheese other than Lancashire, obviously?
Oh, they're all favourites. It depends what mood I'm in. Yeah. They're all my favourites. You know, I do love blue cheese.
Yeah.
I'd love to make a blue cheese one day.
Would you?
Yeah, one day. I keep messing now.
He keeps tinkering.
I keep tinkering, a little tinker.
Yeah.
One day, I'd like to create, in a very, very small way, a blue Lancashire. Because the Lancashire and the Stilton, we are so close.
Yeah.
We are so close together.
The way you make it is very similar. You wouldn't believe it, but it's just...
We're very similar. So it'd be nice to do something like that.
What, so rather than cross mine that, you'd just do that?
No, there's a few differences, but in terms of the slow acidification, the removal of moisture by hard work more than acidity. You know,
so I'd like to play around with that a little bit more. I don't know, carrying as we are, make a little bit more cheese. See a little bit more go export.
That's it, just carry on farming, carry on cheese. Give your mum a well deserved time off.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, they deserve it, don't they? Gosh, they've worked hard.
Yeah.
It never will, you know, we never will have, you know, 45 people coming to work, car park full of cars, you know. Not us.
You're a farm.
We're a farm, we're
a working farm. You've been trained by that little, you're a working farm.
And you know, my goal would be probably to get to about 120, 30 cows milking.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. Yeah. Turn all that into cheese. Have a nice break at Christmas.
Yeah.
Make it, still keep that quality, keep it really, really good. And just everybody enjoy it, really.
Well, I hope you get that, and I hope we can sell more cheese too.
I hope you do. We need you.
Well, thank you very much, Graham.
You're more than welcome. You're more than welcome. Thank you very much.